Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to The Ruck. What we needed today was a referee, and so we got one. That is not because Steve Jones and me, that's me, Owen Slots, need refereeing. It's because there are a lot of issues in the game right now. And anyway, it seemed like a cute way into saying that we have... Can we have a drum roll, please? Our guest for the day is Wayne Barnes. Wayne's one of the best referees in the world, and that's not just because he found a way of stopping...
Don't say he's one of the best, or you'd be insulted.
Well, I said this is my intro.
Oh, sorry.
You're not supposed to interrupt until a little bit later. Right. Anyway, what I was going to say, which you totally ruined, he's one of the best referees in the world. All right, move on. Jonesy, that was Steve Jones who interrupted me. Jonesy, great to see you. And Wayne, great to have you back.
Oh, thanks for having me back. Always a pleasure to be with two of my favourite journalists.
Oh, well said. Who's the other one? Oh, there isn't another one.
Well, I had a list of top 10, actually, but Jonesy just snuck into the top 10.
Jonesy, just to start off with Wayne, can you embarrass him and give our listeners your appraisal of his qualities as a referee at the moment?
Well, a different class. There was a comment on Twitter the other day complaining bitterly about his beard. It was from a Polly Barnes.
Well, fair enough.
I don't know whether it's any relation, but didn't like it. Qualities as a ref, well, I think the accuracy is absolutely incredible, really. And he, and probably not only Wayne, but a couple of French people, two or three of the French guys, and Nigel Owens sort of reversed the thing where rugby was becoming impossible to referee, and every match, or far too many matches, depended on the refereeing rather than the play. But when Wayne's refereeing, you can be sure that the better team will probably win, and it won't be some dodgy decisions.
You're right with that?
Well, yeah, that's probably the brown envelope I passed Steve beforehand. But no, I'll take that. It, you know, when someone like Steve says words like that, it means a great deal. You know, you're never going to be popular as a referee. You know that when you go into it. If that's why you're going into it, you're going in for it for the wrong reasons.
Oh, but same as journalism.
Exactly.
Seriously, they don't expect to make friends in this game. But sorry.
No, but if you're respected by your peers, you know, other referees, or if you're expected by people who are respected in a game, you know, you two, not with tongue in cheek, are extremely well respected across a game. It means a lot when someone says that. So thanks
that's
very
lovely,
much.
Isn't it?
I just think that it's, you know, people don't realise one of the things of doing this for 500 years, as I've done, is that you get a historical perspective. For a start, things like the Premiership, people know you can only savour the Premiership as it is now if you were there at the start when it was an utter shambles. And actually, people don't realise how good the refereeing is now over the major games, because that used to be terrible. The Southern Hemisphere used to come up with a different set of laws, and only the Irish are now refereeing to a different set of laws. The rest of the world are actually all together.
And I think the Premiership, Steve, though, it's no coincidence that, you know, we've started to invest a bit of money with the RFU and Premier Rugby and a lot of young and impressive referees, you know, the likes of Luke Pearce, who, you know, did that cracking game that you spoke about a couple of weeks ago in Racing versus Toulouse. We've got, you know, Matt Carley, who's doing extremely well, did that fantastic West Country Derby. And now the young guys coming through, Christoph Ridley, you've probably seen this year, you know, Tom Foley, Craig Maxwell Keyes, Ian Tempest. The list goes on, and these are guys who are just, you know, not even 30 yet and refereed 50 Premiership matches, and that goes back to investing in a system. And so, you know, it's nice to hear that, you know, someone who's been around the Premiership for a long time is saying this is, you know, best crop of referees we've ever had.
Wayne, you were confirmed, I think, was it last week or the week before, as a World Cup referee, your appointment confirmed?
We're still waiting for the official confirmation from Rugby World Cup. You know,
well, can we announce it officially on The Ruck then?
No, I think we'll wait for World Rugby to announce that. Look, I'm hoping I'll be in Japan. It's you know what, November 1st will be the second will be the final. So we'll be out there for 8 weeks if we do go. But I'm hoping some of the people that I've mentioned in that list will be out there with me. It's the peak of every player, it's the peak of every coach, and it'll be the peak of every referee if we get selected to it. But
I think it's a statement of the obvious that you'll be there, so I can say that. Jones would agree.
Yeah, of course.
Would it be a statement of the obvious that if you do get confirmed to go, that your ambition as a referee would be to call the World Cup final?
You can't control things like that, because you know there's a team such as England who will be trying to get in that final as well. All I can do, and you know it's a cliche and we hear it every time, is go out there and deal with each game as you can. But there's a lot of blinking rugby left before then. You know, we've got the semi-final of the Heineken Cup this weekend over in, or Champions Cup over in Dublin, which I'm refereeing. We've got the end of the season in the Premiership, and then we've got the Rugby Championship to come. So you know, there's a lot of rugby to be done, and if I do go to the World Cup, you know, I'll just be hoping to, you know, continue to you know, do what Jonesy said, and you know, provide the teams an opportunity to the best team to win.
So I think this is going to sound very Anglo-centric, but I do come from Rogerstone in the Gwent Valley, so it's not that. But I think that it would be marvellous if all the top referees had a season in the Premiership. It is easily the most difficult competition to referee. It is refereed incredibly well compared to 10 years ago and 5 years ago. And I really think that the Aussies, Australians, for instance, when all they've had in their career is Super Rugby, I just think it would be magnificent for them to come up and do a season in the Premiership, because it is unbelievably difficult to do.
Well, anyway, do you think of that? Is that a fair point? Is it the hardest competition?
I think the one thing we've got is promotion and relegation. And I know you've discussed this on this pod, you know, many a times, and so that does add something to the league. I think this league, in the 15 years I've been refereeing the Premiership, is perhaps the closest league ever and the most, you know, it's the most enjoyable to watch. You know, I'm sure we'll talk about Newcastle, Leicester later, but you know, that's a relegation game, and what a game of rugby it was. So we have a cracking competition, and I know a lot of my Southern Hemisphere colleagues in Super Rugby want to come up and experience it. You know, for the challenge.
Do they say they would like to do that?
Yeah, but I'm the same. I want to go down and experience Super Rugby, you know, because it's a different challenge. You know,
it would be good if World Rugby was able to facilitate that, or?
Yeah, it'd be fantastic if we could somehow get that over the line, whether that's an agreement between, you know, SANZAR and EPCR.
Has it been talked about? I mean, is that...
We discuss it a lot as a group of referees, because we want to challenge ourselves, you know. And you know, me going down to do, you know, imagine going to do the Crusaders versus the Highlanders. That'd be pretty special, you know. And the guys say the same; they want to come up and see, you know, a full shed. You know, until you've seen a shed and chanting, you don't know what you're doing. You've never really refereed.
they also, you know, I think it'd be lovely. I'm not so sure whether the referees. I don't expect Wayne to comment on this, but whether referees should be attached to their national unions. I think there should be a global body who are completely independent. If eight of that body are all Kiwis, but if they're judged to be the best, that's fine. I think I'm not even sure in my head, Wayne, if English referees should go along to English sessions. But there we go. We better move on there.
All right. So here we are in our studio on a Monday morning, less than 24 hours since something very significant happened in the world of sport yesterday in the United States. So we all saw what happened. Tiger Woods, one of the greatest, I don't know, we're in the middle of assessing whether that's the greatest comeback of all time. Every newspaper tomorrow will have their top 10 best comebacks in the history of sport, their top 10s this, top 10s that. So can we give that a little bit of rugby perspective, best comebacks in rugby?
I think there's a couple which jump to mind straight away, and I think on the back of, you know, a Lions tour in 2017, I was over in Australia when the Lions were playing, and I think we all watched that game up in Whangarei and thought, oh, that's not the greatest start. And then we lost to the Blues in that opening game, and they were meant to be the worst of the five Super Rugby teams. Then we saw the first test and we thought, oh my goodness, this isn't going well. So to come back from, I think, you know, that adversity was an impressive sight from a rugby field. I think we all remember the Northampton versus Leinster final down in 2011 down in Cardiff. You know, I think they were almost 20 points down at one stage, mm-hmm. and at halftime they went into the change rooms and we heard about Johnny Sexton's
yeah.
Liverpool talk, wasn't it?
Yeah,
where
yeah.
he spoke about.
But he was a young man revealing himself as a very spiky character who wasn't prepared to accept defeat, wasn't he?
Yeah, and Driscoll spoke about it afterwards, didn't he? And said, he referenced the 3-0 comeback from Liverpool, because I think Johnny's a Liverpool fan. So that you then jumped to the Liverpool 3-0 kind of, going into a different sport. I think the 3-0 comeback against Milan in the final in Istanbul, and I think that was 05. All of those resonate when you ask me about.
That was actually my worst ever day as a sports journalist, because I was reporting on that game, the Liverpool game.
I hope you didn't file too early.
No, well, that's the point. You're in Istanbul and it's a night game and you've got the file, and Liverpool are 3-0 down at half time. So you think, this is the easiest bit of work I've ever got in my life. So you finish your report pretty much by the end of half time, and then the amount of rewriting in the second half of that game and into extra time was miserable. Jonesy, what's your rugby comebacks?
First of all, I don't think any other sport's got anything to touch Tiger and everything that surrounds him. I've covered actually all his Open victories in the British Open, and it's just mesmeric, man, who's up there with Ali and obviously Harry Kane as the as the greatest. I loved that every second of it yesterday and the whole thing. And it is one of the greatest comebacks, because he told Jack Nicklaus in, I think it was 2 years ago, he'd never play again, and it was all up for him. And to come back and play so well and to be almost mistake-free on the most difficult course was staggering. But rugby-wise, of course, there was Wayne Barnes in 2007 when he allegedly missed a forward pass and something else in the quarter-final.
Yeah, thanks for the reminder, Steve.
Was pilloried savagely by Kiwis.
When he knocked the All Blacks out of the World Cup.
Yes, he kicked the All Blacks
moment.
Out. Yeah, yeah. And then his urinal appeared next to mine in Queenstown. But it can't really be a comeback, because his urinal's gone while mine's still there. So he must have done something in the meantime.
Yeah, replaced by Donald Trump, though.
Replaced by Donald Trump. There was one, I got one, but Lassie Veerman, this is not a rugby one, but Lassie Veerman, the brilliant gold medal long distance runner, was in the 10,000 metres in the Olympics, and he fell flat on his face in the final and was miles behind. But not only did he win the gold, he also broke the world record. Therefore, it was either the best comeback of all time, or it confirmed all the allegations that he was a blood doper.
I'm going to say... Thanks for that.
Sorry, Lassie, if you're listening.
if we're talking about other sports, can I mention one? Because I was down in New Zealand in 2013 when the America's Cup was on. And they have a passion for the America's Cup.
That was the Ben Ainslie one, wasn't it?
It was Ben Ainslie they were 4-1 down. Ainslie got brought on board, and I think they lost the next four anyway. So they were 8-1 down. And he came back to the skip of the side and the boat, the US Oracle team, to a 9-8 win. And to be kind of caught up with a sport that you'd never really followed before was, really, mesmerising to see that kind of reaction. And it's amazing how sport does that. You can be sitting at home watching the Winter Olympics and all of a sudden you get caught up in, curling, or Commonwealth Games and the netball team, and it was one of those moments. And that's one of the comebacks that I always remember.
Yeah, right. Okay. If we're going off beam, Rulon Gardner, American wrestler, Olympic champion in 2000. 2002, he goes off on a snowmobile into Utah, I think he is. He falls off his snowmobile into a frozen river. He's on his own. No one knows where he is. He's left for dead. He thinks he's going to die. He gets hypothermia. Eventually. Someone manages to locate him. I think that there's a sort of a heat of thing that locates this man who's on the last heartbeat of his life. Anyway, they recover him. They have to get a hacksaw to take his boots off. He loses a couple of toes due to being cold, and comes back 2 years later in the Olympics and he wins a bronze medal.
Oh my goodness.
I think that's in terms of come back from adversity, that's up there. But rugby wise, I think the best rugby comeback has to be the French where they beat New Zealand in the 99 semi-final, which I could have gone to, but I was at home celebrating my first child's first birthday. So I hope he's listening to this, because I don't really think he understands what I missed for him. But the one of the great rugby comebacks for me was the All Blacks when they beat Ireland in Dublin 2013. You weren't at that game?
No, Nigel was refereeing that game, wasn't he?
That's right. So Ireland had a 19-0 lead, 22-7 at half time, and this was the All Blacks when they were trying to complete a year of an unbeaten year of Test rugby, last game of the season for them. 22-7 down at half time, and then they had to score with the last play of the game. I don't know if you remember that, a just phenomenal try when they went through about a million and one phases from one end of the pitch to the other, and then Ryan Crotty went over in the corner. And then Nigel Owens magnificently allowed Aaron Cruden two goes at the conversion, didn't he?
Yeah.
And he missed the first one. And he said he can have another go at that because one of the Irish players moved.
I'll tell you what. In the end of that game over in November when Ireland turned over the All Blacks, you could sense everyone just reminiscing back to that game, because there was that period of play where the Kiwis were attacking and attacking and attacking again, and you could just everyone think it's going to happen again. Yeah. And so you know the way that they defended that last few minutes, you know, just put that game up on a pedestal for me as one of the best ever.
That's reminiscing done for a while. We'll go straight to a subject that's at the heart of rugby and rugby conversation over the last few days. I'm sure you will have seen it in the papers or in the media. On midweek last week, Israel Folau posted a very controversial post in which he said that homosexuals, amongst many others, were destined for hell. Folau was castigated in Australia at the time and has since lost his contract with Rugby Australia. But that was then followed by Billy Vunipola, who liked Israel Folau's post. Billy was then advised by some friends to unlike it because this was very controversial territory. Billy did the opposite. He then went on Instagram and explained himself. He said, I am not going to unlike this. I stand by liking it. And he went further to explain himself, in which he said that his religious faith said that man was put on the earth to procreate with woman. And therein the bonfire escalated. Billy is going to be meeting the RFU this week to discuss the situation. The RFU is very, very clear that it is all-inclusive. It wants anyone and everyone to feel that the game is for them. The subject is so complicated, because where does freedom of speech end, and what should Billy be allowed to say? I think there's a huge number of people who will be offended by what he said, who will think that maybe the rugby's not for me if I'm not going to be welcome there. All these things are going to be played out this week when Billy goes to see the RFU, and it's an uncomfortable situation, Steve.
Yeah, very uncomfortable. In terms of welcome, I think rugby is one of the most welcoming sports. So let's just put something into perspective. Now, there was lurid publicity from Israel and a little bit pushed by Billy, but in the Bingham Cup, we've had gay World Cup for rugby for ages. King's Cross Steelers have been going for 20-odd years, I think, and I think that there is no, as far as I can see, I've never come across any homophobic behaviour, attitudes in rugby in my whole life. Similarly, racism, I just never come across it. There was one incident involving Glenn Webb about 30 years ago in Wales, but I think the welcome for rugby in rugby is very warm. Not that long ago, I compared a session at the Sunday Times Literary Festival in Cheltenham with Gareth Thomas, and when he told us that the loneliness he'd been through, the potential for him to commit suicide, etc., at the end of it, the audience streamed out in tears.
And he's talking about the loneliness before he came out.
Yeah, before he came out. Yeah, exactly. Nigel Owens has obviously still has problems, which I think are kind of dietary, with the bulimia, as he said, but I also sat down with Sam Stanley, who came to us, and he sort of came out in the Sunday Times after all the time when he'd been lonely and felt suicidal, etc. So I don't think in any way that it is a bad place to be gay. I still don't think rugby is a bad place to come out and say you're gay should you want to. You don't have to, should you want to. Israel Folau, this thing about hell and going to hell, that is not even old-fashioned anymore. That's just like 5,000 years ago. I mean, does anyone really think you go to a dark place down a hill where Mephistopheles is there to claim your soul? I don't think so, Israel. Billy Vunipola, I still would not have booed him had I been at a match.
So he was booed when he came on.
Yeah, Sam Stanley's quote tweet to greet Billy was, "Billy Vunipola is a great bloke, and he is a great bloke," and that's coming from a guy who's had been tortured through being gay before he came out. Billy's a great guy, didn't deserve booing. He cannot come out again and create that situation where rugby's seen as a non-inclusive sport.
Well, how did you regard this? I mean, you're friends with Nigel Owens, but yeah, that's actually irrelevant. I mean, it's an uncomfortable position for the game.
Yeah, firstly, like, it's totally at odds with my own personal views, and that's why I was really proud of the way that the RFU and Saracens came out, you know, very quickly, unequivocally, and said, look, this isn't our game, this isn't what we believe in. And you know, you've mentioned Nigel, but in the Premiership, you know, we've got open gay match officials who are very much part of our team, and you know, when you speak to them, they feel very inclusive. You know, we are an inclusive sport, we're an inclusive bunch, and I see the game very much like Steve says. You know, it is a game that I'm very proud to call my own, and you know, that's part of the reasons that, you know, is all those strong values. But what was interesting and perhaps, you know, quite ironic was that last weekend, and you mentioned it on the pod last weekend because you had Christian Day in here, was restart week, all the players were wearing their red shirts.
Poor time in that respect, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, because, you know, there are people, you know, particularly mental health in men, you know, we all know, you know, it's one of the biggest killers is suicide in men, and you know, people who are struggling to come to terms with issues which I'm sure they've got in their lives, you know, we want to support them as much as you can, and you hope that comments such as, you know, that we've heard over the weekend doesn't, you know, affect that, you know, because we want to be a sport which embraces everyone. And so, you know, I thought it was really, you know, badly timing when, you know, the RPA are doing wonderful kind of, you know, work. We're trying to make a load of money for their Restart charity, and you had that on the back of it.
Mm. So I mean, Jonesy has said my opinion of Billy also, that he always seems one of the great guys out there. I mean, how you've refereed him, you see him from a slightly different perspective to us. How's he always come over to you?
Yeah, a fantastic character. You know, someone as a referee, he'll always come and speak to you beforehand. You know, Jonesy has mentioned me training with England. You know, when I'm in with England, he'll always make an effort to come and, you know, come and chat, see how you're doing, come and sit with you at lunch, and you know, he's always, you know, got a big smile on his face, and you know, you admire him as a player, and you know, I still massively admire him as a player, and you know, he's a special player, and we want him in the England team.
The other Barnes in our lives, the B Barnes, Stuart Barnes, his piece in the Sunday Times yesterday, I thought was really well observed and helped explain how complicated it is, that this depth of religious faith. Well, Folau and Vunipola, they're both islanders by descent, and they've been brought up into this faith system, which ironically comes from British Empire and Christian missionaries, and so effectively we gave it to them, and now we're judging them on the back of it. Kind of makes it harder that's what they were brought into. To what extent should they be allowed to inflict it on others?
For a start, Billy's faith. I sat down with Billy to talk about his faith not that long ago when the RPA launched their Lift the Weight campaign. And the idea of the campaign was, it's okay to be everything in rugby. It's also okay to be religious. And I was awestruck by the power of Billy's religious convictions. Didn't mention at the time that he agreed that they Gay should be sent to hell, I admit. But there is no doubting the sheer intensity of the way that Billy tries to live by his religious convictions. And that is something that, in a way, is a mitigation, but not a total mitigation. I put it to a member of the RFU's inclusivity committee, standing committee on the weekend, is it mitigation? He said totally not. I do think that it must be some kind of small mitigation when you feel it that deeply.
And the complicated thing is you said Billy didn't say to you that he thought that gays should go to hell. But he didn't say that in his post either. But now we're into what does social media actually mean? You know, so Billy supported Fallout. So does that mean that he necessarily agrees with his position? And then when Billy made his post, that was then liked by a large number of very well-known rugby players in England, many of whom play for the England national team, one of whom, Courtney Laws, liked it and then came on and stipulated later that he didn't agree with the views with Billy's religious views. So,
you made a good point in your piece last week, Owen, around, you know, what does liking something mean? You know, someone who doesn't engage in social media at all, you know, I wouldn't have a clue what liking something or following someone meant. But you know, you've got to be just so careful now around, you know, making sure you know what you're liking or what you're agreeing to and what does, you know, clicking that little thumb on and Twitter mean, you know. So but I thought your point was really well made about, you know, it doesn't automatically mean that you're supporting what's said in a statement. You might be supporting your friend, you might just be saying, you know, this is something to have further discussions. And Steve, you were saying earlier that you use it just to save.
There's no save button. Brian Moore wrote that this morning in one of those was it called? What's his paper called? I can't remember now. he wrote that you use the like to save it. But I mean, I don't think that sorry, let's just remember, this demonstrates that you cannot express anti-gay and even the destruction of gay people. You cannot express it if you're a rugby player because of the fate, not the fate, because of Folau and... I brought that stuff into the open, and it is a no-no. It is no more excuses. Whatever excuse you have, you haven't got it anymore. Because, as Sam Stanley said, if that had happened just before he came out, after all those years of torture, he would not have come out. So there must be loads of people in rugby who feel the same and want to know if they can come out and live a normal life. So no more excuses now. You cannot refer to gay people in that way.
So just to finish this off, how do you both think we or the RFU can or should resolve this? Personally, I think to sack Billy or to say he can't play for England would be way, way out of kilter, a vast overreaction. But we have to find some sort of a compromise whereby the RFU or Billy gets to a point where he can help gay people feel that they are welcome in rugby and that he doesn't think they shouldn't be in rugby, which is where we are at the moment.
I think it'd be interesting to see what happens in the RFU meeting. I think he's meeting later in this week, and I think that'll be a full and frank discussion. And I'm sure that those conversations will be having at Saracens as well, because, you know, Saracens have been very strong in what they've said on straight away.
What they do is they say, Billy, never do that again. Good luck against Munster on Saturday.
Okay, very good. Wayne, you were at an epic game on Friday night. I said it was beforehand the Premiership game of the season. That's Newcastle, Leicester, the sort of what had become the biggest relegation battle of the season. Incredible Premiership weekend again. So that game in Kingston Park, you went to Jonesy. Mm. I watched the second half on the box. I was pretty impressed by the fact that it wasn't choking conservatives scared out of our wits of rugby. Is that how it was to you, Steve?
Oh, a tremendous sweeping game. Yes, you know, I think you're slightly predicated to do that on the artificial surface, but it was a fantastic game. And you think a visitor from Mars or wherever, or visitor from Newcastle football, had they been there, would have thought it was a top of the table clash, because the intensity, the quality of play, it was absolutely tremendous. And to think that they played like that, with where their nerves must have been incredible. I mean, 5 minutes before the end, I think in the last 5 minutes, Newcastle had four or five drives where if they'd scored, it would have been a bonus point win. And as we speak now, Leicester would have been bottom of the table. But they just threw off their cares. It was really, really warm up there as well, honestly. It was only minus 20. And it was a fantastic game. And I have to say, I am totally in favour of promotion and relegation. But at the end of that game, to see the Newcastle fans and Newcastle players, I realised the pain you go through, and I felt a complete rotter.
Yeah, I've been involved in a lot of those relegation games, not just this season, but over the last few seasons, with the likes of Newcastle, Worcester, Bristol, London Irish. And often they're a bit of a damp squid of a game because everyone plays within themselves. Players don't want to make mistakes, so they just kick the ball and say, we're not going to make a mistake, you're going to make a mistake. And they can become just tense, drab affairs. But this was a bit different. You know, we saw some fantastic pieces of skill. You know, two cracking tries from Newcastle in particular. You know, when Nicky Gonover stood up the young winger Jordan Alawafewa. I hope I pronounced that right.
I think well done for having had a crack at that.
Yeah.
But I always think having a go is better than at least you try.
I thought you were just going to leave it at the young Leicester
Jordan,
winger.
Jordan.
Do you think we're talking about the same player? At least he had a go, fair play.
But Jordan would never have faced something like a Nicky Gonover step, who, you know, within the 5 metre line, absolutely ripped it open, and then had that beautiful pass back inside. And you're like, this is a special game of rugby. And then, you know, you could just see the release at the end of the match. You know, Dan Cole even smiled at the end of the match. It was that much of a release. But, you know, the Leicester players, you could see, were just delighted. You know, they're jumping on top of each other, you know, huge celebrations up in the coach's box as well. So it was nice to see a game of rugby where they played to win rather than were petrified of losing.
But could you nevertheless sort of see the terror in their eyes, and it, you know, when the game stopped, when they were forming for scrums? I mean, did their body language betray any of that at all?
You sense it in the change rooms beforehand. You know, we go in the change rooms and you meet the players, you check the studs still, you know, we still do that, and talk to the front rows, and you sense there was that nervous tension. But I think that's just why it speaks volumes about the standard of that game. You know, in the last two or three minutes, no one knew who was going to win that game. No one knew who was going to be bottom at the end of the weekend. And, you know, the only discussion point that we had, and I had with Dean Richards afterwards, was around why they didn't kick for the corner, because they had a bit of success from that in the first half. They got their Mike Williams sin binned. They actually scored a try from the next passage of play, from a pick and go, and they almost got over at the front when they had the short front of the line.
You asked Dean that afterwards, did you?
We were just discussing, you know.
And what did he say?
He said, I would have kicked for the corner. But you know, that's a decision that players make on the day. And you know, they had a huge amount of success with the pick and go against Montpellier earlier in the year, you'll remember. But I thought Guy Thompson read the last play really well. He played extremely well the whole game. Mm. You know, really smart around the breakdown, and also scored the intercept try. It was just one of those nights where you're like, there is a reason why we've got promotion and relegation.
So I just add to that Simon Hammersley of Newcastle was absolutely wonderful at fullback and running. And there was another interesting point there, because Takalua, the goal kicker, has got a really, really difficult to read final nudge before he starts running up. But it is before he starts running up.
Because the referee, he did.
So when he nudges on two occasions, they charged. Yeah. And the referee, controversially, he's actually not started his run-up, because he doesn't start till his foot goes forward.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so it was taken again. I mean, he missed the first one, then he puts over the second one. So
Barnes's law, then.
Barnes's law, yeah. So it was just fantastic. I loved it. I also, actually, then, caught my... I took seven trains to, up to Newcastle and then Worcester and then home. After my sixth train, I watched Worcester and Sale, and that was a fantastic game as well. I was very lucky.
So, all right. So, Jonesy, so you've seen Newcastle, you saw Worcester the next day. You're immersed in that relegation battle. Do you think it's almost done? A Newcastle done?
Newcastle have to beat Northampton this weekend, preferably by a bonus point. Absolutely, totally non-negotiable. This is a Northampton team now going for top five. I think Newcastle are good enough, but Newcastle categorically have to win this week, and then it's still not all safe for them, because the horrible thing was when they woke up on Sunday morning, the 2 days after their bitter defeat, they found that not only had Worcester come in with a bonus point win, but Bristol had won as well. So it was just a really horrible weekend for them, which they don't deserve. I think they're a fantastic rugby club with great fans, great people in charge and great players. And if they do go down, they'll bounce back.
But the thing is, Worcester and Bristol, you've just said actually that Newcastle played with some freedom, but Worcester seemed to be fairly majestic for a team that were 11th in the table, and Bristol turned over Saracens. I mean, those aren't two clubs that look like they're absolutely terrified of what's going to happen.
Every game, Gloucester Bath was fantastic. The Bristol game, obviously. Worcester played as if it was a end of season match in which they were mid table. They were absolutely superb. Francois Vent in the centre was absolutely wonderful. They got some great forwards there, tough boys, and it was just a great performance.
Wayne, how many years have you refereed the Premiership for?
Did my first game in 2003, so what's this, my 16th season. Yeah.
Blimey.
Yeah.
That's nothing.
And you know it's his birthday on Saturday.
Yeah.
So you'll be 105 on Saturday. You're refereeing the Leinster game on Sunday. So what I want to ask you, so you've been in the Prem since 2003.
Yeah.
So you've had a closer view than anyone on as to how it's changed. So this season, with this amazing, weird relegation battle, is this the closest that you've ever seen a standard at the bottom higher than you've seen before?
I think it's the standard across the league. You know, anyone can and have beaten anyone this year. You know, you look at a game down at Sandy Park. We wouldn't have called that a week ago, particularly after the way that Exeter played against Leicester. We've just spoken about Worcester beating Sale, and Sale very impressive at home against Harlequins last week. So I think it is a league now where, you know, you can, hand on heart, say that you don't know who's going to win any game when it goes into. Of course, the top two are the top two. Mm-hmm. The next round of the Premiership, we've got Saracens going up to Wasps. You know, is that going to be a straightforward game? We've got Leicester against Bristol. You know, we've got lots of games.
A lot for that one.
Yeah, exactly. You've got lots of games where you're intrigued by, and I think that's why the public's imagination has really been caught this season, because it's not just the bottom three or four, it's who's going to finish in the top four. You know, Harlequins losing to Northampton. Who would have thought that a few weeks ago? But now that top four, that fourth spot, you know, looks like Gloucester have got their third spot nailed on now. But, you know, you've got Wasps, Northampton, Harlequins, all within a win of each other. And who might then have to go down to Sandy Park for the semi-final? And, you know, I just think it's a fantastic, intriguing league this year. Probably the best out of the 16 years for, you know, really catching the public's imagination. No,
one of the reasons that we were really glad to get Wayne on for this episode is because it was only a couple of weeks ago that many of the great and the good in the game were meeting in Paris to talk about game, the laws, the welfare, the safety of players, and what should be done to change rugby union to ensure that it's a better game. Well, actually, I think A was welfare, A, how to make the game safer for players without losing what rugby union is essentially about, the contest. A few very interesting things came out of that. Wayne, you must have been a very interested observer when the news was reported following Paris.
I think we all are aware that, you know, player safety must be at paramount of our minds when we're considering law changes. We shouldn't just be changing laws for the sake of them. And so there's been a few suggestions which have trickled through. Not seen anything categorically yet, so it will be interesting how these are trialled, because one of the things which I think is really important is that you don't just do a law, change a law without considering what the unforeseen consequences are. Because, you know, for example, there's been discussions around, you know, getting rid of the jackler, which might be the way forward. But does that mean then we're going to have more ball in play? Does that mean we're going to have more tackles, more collisions? You know, so all those things need to be considered in the whole before just making a decision around, well, let's try this. And what I think the RFU's done in the past, and they've done it down in Stellenbosch as well, is trialled certain laws. So, for example, we trialled the concussion kind of reducing the tackle height, and I think we probably all would have sat here before that trial thinking that should work. But, you know, as we've heard from Dr. Kemp, and we've heard from Dean Ryan, you know, saying, well, you know, that hasn't worked, and so that's why they decided to, you know, to remove that trial at that stage. So I think we need to trial things, and we need to make sure that we do continue to press the point around player safety. But I'm interested to see how that goes over the next, you know, 3 months, or particularly it'll be post-World Cup, I would imagine.
As a referee, so I was very in favour of trialling the lower tackle, and thus disappointed when it proved that it didn't work. But I was just wondering, if you're refereeing a lower tackle, if the tackle height is as it is now across the top of the shoulders, it's quite... Well, it's comparatively easier to see than if there is a line that you're sort of imagining across the underside of the armpit, which is, or the nipple line, or whatever it's called. Would that worry you if the tackle line does come down and you are refereeing a line that's not as clear?
I didn't referee in the Championship Cup, which it was trialled within. But speaking to some of my colleagues who had done it, they said what was noticeable is when you had the borderline ones about was it your chest or neck or chest or head, those are the ones to penalise. And whether it was an exact strip along the shirt, you know, a centimetre or two either way, that the idea behind it was to remove the direct contacts with the head and the neck. You know, so for example, the reason why they brought in the 5 metre law at the scrum was to create a little bit more space. Now, if it's 4.9 metres or 5.1 metres, you're still creating an element of space. So it almost gives you that margin of error. And what we said around the tackle was what we want to change player behaviour about tackling lower, and that was the idea behind it, is to take that tackle down a foot. And that was the thought behind that trial.
And do you so on the subject of how the game should change to make it safer, do you have a number one suggestion? What's the Wayne Barnes rule to making rugby better?
It's
over to you now, Wayne.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you've got lots of good suggestions out there at the moment, but we're just not quite sure if they're going to work. You know, I know Steve's a big advocate around, you know, reducing the number of replacements, you know, which again could work. You know, there is that idea of removing the jackler, which again could work. There is an idea of creating a bit more space at the offside line, so taking that back a metre, so that players actually have better vision as they're running into that contact zone. So you know, players do have time to adjust and get their head on the correct side and a better tackling technique. So there are lots of things which I think should be considered. They should be trialled. Whether there's a one fit solution, I don't think there is, because we still want our game to look similar to, you know, what our game looks like. There is still a need for those big, you know, legal, legitimate collisions. You know, Toby Flood was at the end of, you know, caught the ball from a big high kick on Friday night, and as he caught it, it was a man and ball tackle from I think it was Mike Williams again, and you know, the crowd reacted to it, and the crowd want to see those, you know, collisions which are legal, which, you know, are part of our, you know, game. So, you know, we don't want to we don't want to remove that side of the game, but we do want to make sure it's as safe as it can be for the players, because, you know, they've got to be protected.
I don't think, for a start, there's more things wrong with the game than the safety thing. So they've got to sort that. They've got to hurry up now and do a trial without the jackal. They must try it at a decent level to see if we can, A, get back to the jackal is not under so much danger, and B, we might get back to some form of rucking. Now, ball in play time, I do not count ball in play time as when people are boringly driving it round the corner. You know, round the corner. That's not ball in play time. You might as well go and watch the cowboy on the other side. That's not ball in play time. They've got to get rid of that. They've got to put a clock. They're thinking of putting a clock on the scrum. They should put a clock on the line-out too. Why you ever let people walk away 15 metres to chat about the line-out call? These people are professionals. They've trained every day that week. If you can't make a line-out call as you're approaching the line-out, it's ridiculous. That's two things. Not that I feel strongly about that. Ball in play time is not going round the corner.
But ball in play time. Sorry, just on ball in play time. It's interesting to me because some people discuss ball in play time as if the more ball in play time you have, the better the game is. So obviously there's more action for the punters
to watch,
etc.
That's never been.
But the other side of that is more ball in play time means more tackles and more opportunity for people to get injured. So you're sort of winning and losing at the same time.
But it depends what's happening with the ball. Do you know what? The ball in play time is one of 25,000 statistics people keep throwing at you that have no interest whatsoever. Depends what's happening. When Gareth Edwards played, the ball play was hardly there. But when Gareth had it, you'd swap 5 minutes for Gareth to 15 minutes with the ball trundling round the corner. It's the ball in play time is not the be all and end all of everything. What they've got to do is they've got to get as many people as they can in towards the breakdown so that backs play backs. Backs up against backs as it used to be. They've got to get the forwards out of the way because people say, oh, these forwards, they're almost as good as centres. They may well be, but the centres are better than them as centres. And they've got to get people into a narrower area of the field so that the rest of the people who can really play, the Simon Hammersleys, etc., Veronique Gonova, Danny Cipriani, can operate without having all these big lumps of horse meat all over the place.
Good. Well, it's nice to hear that Jones has got a soft view on these things as usual.
Also, we could have re-fit offside, we could reintroduce it. Wayne never has it in his game, but re-fit offside, other referees are allowing, especially the outside centre, you might as well give him a jersey for the other side.
Wayne, one of the just last thing on that, and you probably get asked this a lot, and it's apologies if it's a tedious old question for you, but there's a lot of conversation about safety around the ruck and people flying in to clear out rucks, etc., and the laws state that you must be bound before you can push, and
before you can enter the ruck.
Before you can enter the ruck, and so it would appear to me and to many people to be an easy welfare gain if that was refereed more strictly. Is there a reason why it's not?
I think what we're seeing at the moment is the jackaler, the first man in, the man on his feet, and whether or not he is supporting his weight or not. And that's probably where we have become a bit lax, and we've said you can get a little bit longer and a little bit longer. And we probably need as a group to come back a little bit on that and to make sure that he is really strong. He's got his feet underneath his backside, and you know, and his body is then over the ball. That then should encourage people to clear out in a ferocious fashion. But it should keep them on their feet a little bit more. But we're still going to see big collisions over the ball around that because, you imagine David Pocock, for example, who is very good at being on his feet.
Yeah.
He is still a big lump to move. And so you have to move him, you know, with a bit of force, or you've got to kind of, you know, it's been described as the body roll or the crocodile roll. You know, obviously we want to protect their head. So there is that idea of, you know, we probably do need to get players being better over the ball to prevent other players going off their feet, but I still think we will see players moving those bodies by going off their feet as well, because it's a really hard thing to move. You know, a 19 stone muscle bound man who's locked over a ball, how do you move?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, listen, let's look ahead to this weekend. European Heineken Champions Cup semi-finals, Saracens against Munster on Saturday, and then Wayne, you're at the Leinster Toulouse game in Dublin on the Sunday, because Leinster always play at home, as we know. Jones, you'll be at Saracens. It's easy to call two home victories. I'd say if there's an away victory, it's actually probably more likely to be Toulouse, my own personal opinion. Where do you stand?
Well, I think one thing is that the great thing is with Munster, if you realise how difficult they are to play against, you've got a chance of beating them. But people go into games against Munster paying lip service. They think, oh yeah, well, it's going to be tough, but actually we'll probably beat them. Because when you look at their team on paper, it's by no means all that great. Mm. Always remember I told Brian Kennedy, then the owner of Sale, when they went to play it, I said, Brian, careful, because you know you might be going well, but they're really unbelievably difficult. And I said, look, when you get, if your players know, however tough you think it is, it's going to be 10 times as tough. And he sort of almost ignored me. Then he rang me from the loo just before the game. Said, you know what? He said, I cannot believe the intensity of this place. And you're right. And that's what Munster are. Saracens are the better team, but Saracens won't be fooled. They know exactly what they're going to get. They know they're going to have to fight like mad, and it could be 75 minutes before they take the lead. You don't know. But I think Brad Barrett's fitness is massive. But I get the impression, I went to see Maro Itoje and other Saris last week, I think Saris are massively, massively up for it. Mm. And I think in that case that they should win.
They beat them in the semi a couple of years ago, didn't
they? Yeah,
they did.
They
were impressive that day. They were extremely physical, and they won the gain line. So every time, you know, the ball went to a big Munster forward, they dominated the collision. And you know, and that's when Saris are at their best.
Mm. Yeah. Are you allowed to give us predictions, Wayne?
If I could tell you the score, you know, that would be impressive as well, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I think it'll be a cracking game. I refereed the first game between Leinster and Toulouse. Toulouse and Leinster down in Toulouse earlier in the season, just around December time. Mm. That was a fantastic game of European rugby. And then Luke Pearce, who's running Touch Me this weekend, did the return fixture over in the RDS. But I just keep, you know, reflecting back on that game in Racing over in in Paris a couple of weeks ago, and what a fantastic game of rugby that was. And so, if we can get a bit of that on Sunday, it'll be a fantastic birthday present.
I hope they give it to you, Wayne. Seriously. Well, so that's a big weekend. Jones, you've been keeping an eye on the Tyrrell semi-finals as well.
Yeah, I think we should say now that next week, because it's bank holiday, the ruck's out on Tuesday. And we're going to preview the final of the Premier 15s, Tyrrell's Premier 15s, I'm sorry. Don't forget Tyrrell's crisps. Knock Gary Lineker's soggy Walker crisps out of the park every time. Harlequin in the semi-finals on the weekend. Harlequins beat Loughborough Lightning 26-10. That was the one, if there was going to be an upset, that may have been it. But obviously, Harlequins came through. Also, Saracens beat Wasps 31-13, as expected, I think. So the upshot is that the final a week on Saturday at Northampton is going to be the same as it was last year, which is, you know, that's how it's meant to be if the two teams, the two best teams, have come through at the end of the regular season. So we'll be looking at that next week with some of the participants next Tuesday. And I think I think it's gone up another notch this year. There are more good teams in it. The teams at the bottom appear to be catching up slowly. So it's all good. It's on television a week on Saturday. And I'm really looking forward to it.
My daughter went across. We took her across to Harlequins for the last round game when they played Hartbury. And 4,500 people over at Quinn's a couple of weeks ago. She's only four. And it was just fantastic the way that Harlequins embraced that day. And to see 4,500 people going to watch Tyrrell's Premier match was wonderful. I think Northampton are doing a fantastic job already to promote the final. And if I'm not refereeing, I'll be driving up there as well.
Very good. Last business as per usual, gents. God or Goddess of the Week. Jones is frowning as if he hasn't even thought about this.
No, I thought about it. I want to.
You've already mentioned Harry Kane once. No, you can't have him
he's
again.
Injured.
Yeah.
And Tiger's too easy. You can't go for Tiger straight away.
Well, actually, I think, was it 2 years ago? Everyone, we as a group, we voted in Sergio Garcia.
Right.
We did, yeah. Look, I'm going to go Simon Hammersley, the God of the Week, because of the way he ignored the plight of his team and ran the ball beautifully, or from all parts, and successfully. And I just thought he was magic. So that's one reason not to have Tiger.
So I was down commentating on the West Country Derby between Gloucester and Bath on Saturday, and it was a fantastic game. The sun was shining, the shed was full, and you know Gloucester came back from 17-0 down. It was a fantastic game, another fantastic game of Premiership rugby.
He's taking over journalism now as well. He's on the TV. Bloody hell. He's on the TV.
I was sort of following the scoreline. Did Bath slightly choke that, or was it all Gloucester brilliant?
For the first 20 minutes, Bath didn't let Gloucester touch the ball, and they were very, very impressive. Cipriani was outstanding in the next 60 minutes. You know, so Jonesy will be happy with that. And people like Ben Morgan.
He's got the nuances of this thing, isn't he?
So Ben Morgan carried really well. Ruan Ackerman played very well. It was an impressive game. So I was going to nominate the whole of the West Country actually to start, but I changed my mind.
Go for the West Country.
Well, I was thinking about it as I was driving back, and I thought that's who I'll nominate. But then, when I got home, I was lured to the local rugby club, Thamesians Rugby Club, for a quick drink before we went out for dinner. And so, and Mrs. Barnes, Polly Barnes, who Jones has already mentioned.
Well, that's your missus, is it? One who said you didn't like your beard.
Exactly. she had arranged a surprise party. And so 50 of my friends and colleagues were all in Thamesians Rugby Club. And she'd kept that from me. So we had a surprise party. So I'm going to nominate my wife, Polly.
Jesus. Quite right, too. Quite right.
So you've got to do well not to back that, Jonesy, because her.
I do know her. That's absolutely fine. Absolutely fine.
I'm just wiping away the tears. I'm so moved by that.
Yeah, that was really good. Yeah.
Whose was yours going to be?
Oh, my wife. Absolutely no doubt about it. And since I'm hosting, she wins. Thank you very much, guys. This was The Ruck. Thank you for listening. As Jonesy mentioned, we will be back next week, but it's a bank holiday, so no one will be ready to listen on Monday evening. So we're going to record on Tuesday, 24 hours later. We haven't checked with our producer yet. He's laughing. No one told him that. We just made that up. Jonesy, great to see you. Wayne, thanks very, very much for coming on.
Pleasure, thank you.
Great fun. Back next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.